Okay, so I, like a lot of people, are a little skeezed out, a little creeped out by spiders. I mean, they have a bad reputation. They're a little scary, a little creepy. But you know what? They do a lot of good for the environment. And they're actually, most of them are pretty harmless, especially tarantulas. You know, they're the biggest and scariest of the spiders out there looking, I should say. But they're pretty docile, and people keep them as pets. And you know what? There's a long history of people keeping them as pets in America. I mean, it goes back hundreds of years. So you can learn more about tarantulas, what they're like, and their history as pets in America by watching the really fun documentary called Spiders Will Eat Your Face. It's done in stop motion animation, and it's done with some really creative things, and it's very informative, very enjoyable. So I highly recommend you check it out. You can watch it on Amazon.com, Amazon Prime, which you can watch for free if you are a Prime member, and Amazon Instant Watch.
What's going on? What's happening? What are you telling me?
I would like to extend to you an invitation to the pants party.
It's time for the Pop Culture Connoisseurs, a gal and a gay podcast with Kitty.
One time she punched me in the face. It was awesome.
And Nick.
He's the gay of my dreams.
And they have this book, this burn book, where they write mean things about all the girls in our grade.
What does it say about me?
You're not in it.
Those bitches.
Welcome to episode 139 of A Gal and a Gay. We are the Pop Culture Connoisseurs. I am Mick.
And I'm Kitty. Thanks for joining us.
So we're taking a little bit of a break from Stranger Things just to do the podcast.
I know.
We have...
Which is very hard to do.
Right. So we have started binging season two. Are you also... Are we kind of in the
same... I think
same?
We're on the same, yeah. Okay, we stopped so at the same episode. We're all together.
We're starting... We will... Be starting episode
Watch
four.
Three episodes, yes. It's good.
It is.
I mean, it's just
really
as good,
good
as the first season
oh,
so far.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just.
And the character, and again, we're not going to give away any spoilers because we know everyone watches the, you know, these shows now differently. Mm-hmm. But again, we've watched the first three. And I will say the new characters that they've added, that's always sort of a trick for these for hit shows because. They become a hit, and you get so attached to the original characters, and then when they bring in more to the mix, sometimes it doesn't work out
as well. It's not so.
But not so far, the new characters that they've introduced, they...
I'm liking them.
Yeah, me too. They're fitting in nicely. Yeah. And, yeah, the Duffer Brothers, they...
I know. I mean, they know... I feel like they got this niche of... All these, you know, throwbacks to the 80s, and they've done it so well, you know? And so it just works. It just works. And it's just an enjoyable series, you know? It's just fun. So anyway, yeah.
So did you just binge all three all at once?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I started last night. And so I'm probably going to finish them the rest of them tonight. Maybe.
And there are nine.
There are nine episodes.
Nine episodes this season. So.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
And I like the new storytelling formula. There's a different storytelling formula. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. But because at first, again, you're sort of confused by it. Like, wait a minute. And then you pick up and you understand. Because it. The way this season started out, at first I didn't know if it was Stranger Things. I will say that. So don't be surprised.
Right.
If you haven't watched episode one. Basically the cold open, you're like, what?
Yeah.
So it looks like we'll be getting to the cold open sometime throughout the season and how it ties in with our favorites in Hawkins.
And I love Eleven, Millie Bobby Brown. She is just amazing. So, you know, it's great.
Yeah. All the kids.
Yeah, all the kids.
But she is. Yeah. She is the standout.
That's not a spoiler that she's back because she's been in promotional.
Jeremy,
come on. Don't get mad at us.
You're not getting rid of
she's
11.
Back. I mean, come on. Everyone knew that. So.
Sean Austin is in this season.
Paul Reiser.
Yeah, Paul
also
Reiser.
Another 80s icon.
And it seems like he's about to be making a comeback too because it looks like they're trying to bring back Mad About You.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Does anybody want that show again? I know.
That's
it was
the world we live in right now. The entertainment world we live in right
very
now
popular
is
in the
to 90s. Keep bringing things back.
I don't think I even watched that one. I remember watching it.
I didn't like it.
But my parents didn't watch it, and so I didn't watch it either. So
I didn't really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Mm-hmm. It's a weird one to bring back.
Absolutely. Yeah. But again, everything's a hit.
It's true.
So anyway, yeah, Paul Reiser's in it. Sean Austin. Sean Austin is not my favorite. He's only, I really like him in just certain things. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lord of the Rings, yes.
Yeah. Rudy.
I did not like Rudy.
You didn't like Rudy? It's been a long time since I've seen Rudy. Mm-hmm. I like Sean Astin. I like him. I mean, it depends on what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I loved him in that.
Aside from Lord of the Rings, I don't know if he's been in a lot of stuff recently.
What was the, he was in 51st Dates. He was Drew Barrymore's brother. Right. He was so good in that.
Yeah, you're right. He was in that. Yeah.
So it's just certain things that.
I don't know. In his character in this new season of Stranger Things, I don't yet know how
to feel about him. I think there's more to him.
Right.
I think there is more to him.
Agreed. I don't think he.
You don't cast Sean Austin.
To play a bumbly boyfriend, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed. And there's definitely more to him, I think, than there's we know right now. Mm-hmm. So, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you? I mean, it's been since last year that you watched the first season. So did you back in?
No, I should have, but
no,
I didn't.
I should have too. I'm like, you know, there are those videos out there, and I know they're out there where it's like, here, you know, here's season one, in 5 minutes. It's a good recap because they don't do a recap; they just jump right in.
Right.
And there was a part where I'm like, ooh,
right.
Do we know about that? Or I'm like, oh, I should have
right. I should have, but or just read.
And I did try. Like a couple weeks ago, I'm like, all right, I got 15 minutes into episode one, and then something happened, and I had to go do something else. I'm like, well,
it's like I still have a pretty good gist of what happened.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, it's been more than a year, and we binged it in 2 days.
I know that's the thing. Like, I'm trying to resist binging it all at once because I want to savor it, but I know. Like yesterday, I couldn't. I had to stop myself because I was like, I gotta go to bed. It's 12:30. I have to go to bed. Mm-hmm. It's after midnight. But, anyway.
And the way they've ended all of the three episodes that we've watched so far, they're all really good cliffhangers. So it's like, okay, well, and then I thought, okay, after episode two, I'm like, nope, we're going to stop after, you know, this episode.
Right.
And then there's a cliffhanger. And you're like, okay, well, I'll just watch the first few minutes just to see. And then you get hooked.
No,
and then
you can't just watch a few minutes of it.
Dang it.
Dang
it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Very.
Very good. So.
Very good.
I imagine if you are a fan of the show, you are watching it already, so you don't have to take our word for it. But if you have not watched Stranger Things, and they're out there, because one of my coworkers asked if he should be watching, and I said, yes, you definitely should be watching it. But if you haven't watched it, definitely check it out on Netflix. Yeah. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I want to talk about another Netflix series.
Okay.
Mindhunter. Have you heard of this one?
I saw it pop up on my Netflix.
It's I binged it. This week.
Of course,
10 episodes. So what it's about is
an hour long.
Yeah, okay. About an hour long each episode. So it's about the beginning of the FBI profiling and categorizing serial killers. So before the late 70s, serial killers weren't really a thing. Like they were a thing, but they weren't categorized as serial killers. And so this is about the behavioral science unit of the FBI studying. Serial killers to try and come up with a profile. So, you know, if you ever watch Criminal Minds or stuff like that, these are the guys who started all of that technique to help profile them and try to figure out and catch these guys.
Jonathan Groff's in it?
Yeah, and he's great.
Oh, damn it.
Everybody's really great in it. So, I mean, and it's from David Fincher. I mean, it's great. If you like true crime, if you like learning about or hearing about serial killers, it's very good. I mean, it's really interesting and it's a good series. So if you like that kind of stuff, definitely check it out because I really liked it.
Okay, Mindhunter. I'll put that on my list.
Yeah, it's good.
The cast looks amazing. And David Fincher.
Yeah, it's great. So definitely check it out if you like that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I will add that to the list. Netflix, again.
I know. They're just dominating. They have so many great shows that just come out all the time. Sometimes it's hard to keep up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just in the next year or so, it's going to get even more so because they're putting so much money and stuff into new productions.
Right,
and
exactly.
Like that. So, and of course, they're raising the prices.
Well,
so that's also part of it.
Well, of course, that's... But I think it's worth it. Yeah. I mean, they could charge $20 a month and I'd still pay it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so a little bit about some housekeeping notes.
Yes.
So we have a new website.
Yes.
It is a gal and a gay podcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
We've been adding some things to it. You can listen to all of our podcasts on there. We have a blog that we're updating, and we're going to kind of coincide with some of our podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Expand a little bit more on whether we have an interview, like the one coming up later in this podcast with the CEO of Seed and Spark, Emily Best. And we'll explain Seed and Spark here in just a few minutes. We've had other interviews that we've done. We have Planet Earth. Kansas City Comic Con coming up very soon. We're actually going to be a part of it.
Yeah, we're really excited for that.
So we're going to have tons of interviews.
Right.
That
we're going to have a lot of stuff with that, so look for that. So we're going to put as much as we can on our website. This is something new to us, so bear with us as we try to navigate this. We are not technology savvy. Well, we are, but
we are, but
to a point.
Technology is tricky sometimes.
Right. Like, we're not like experts at this, so. But you can go and learn more about us and find our podcasts and our blogs and all that sort of stuff and reach out to us too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And so right now we're working on what we're going to do with Kansas City Comic Con. Mm-hmm. Our friends at the Traveling Vortex, mm-hmm. they are going to join us for a panel the weekend of Kansas City Comic Con, and that is
November 10th through the 12th,
I believe. Yeah. So we're going to be doing a lot there, and that's where we will be updating our blogs. We'll mm-hmm. be on Twitter.
Yeah, look for a lot of updating. stuff that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of content for you.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a lot of new shows that we're watching, and The Walking Dead is back. I did watch it.
Did you? Well, I didn't think you would.
Well, I watched a little bit, so I won't say how I watched it, because we don't have cable. But I will say that I watched it, and I watched it live, but I cannot say how I watched it. Anyway, good luck trying to figure that out, FBI, or whoever is listening.
Right.
But anyway, I did watch it while I was watching something else, and I didn't have the volume up a lot. I mean, I did, I was kind of going back and forth. I wasn't very impressed with it.
I wasn't either. It was meh. It's a meh for me.
Okay, so
maybe it's just because my whole attitude towards Walking Dead has changed that I just can't.
They really bungled it last season. And the thing is, Negan is great.
Yeah, Negan's great.
But they
But I like this whole episode I was watching, you know, and there's all these moments where, you know, she should really be rallying the troops or whatever, and I'm just like, ugh. Like, I'm just rolling my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was just very meh. Why is Judith, like, 10 years old and Maggie's still pregnant? That's an exaggeration. But the kid who plays Judith is definitely older than the kid they had last season.
Right.
And it's still supposed to be like a, I don't know.
Maggie is not giving birth this season.
I know, which is, oh, God.
So that means there's not going to be a time jump because...
Well, I don't know.
There is that time jump. Or something happening in the premiere.
Right.
Old Man Rick or whatever.
I don't know.
I think it's time for them to let The Walking Dead go.
They need to wrap it up. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
This is what, season eight, right? So it's been 8 years. And I still don't feel like there's a clear ending, you know? I don't know. It's just it's just the storytelling and things they choose to do just sometimes is just infuriating, and it's just not interesting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And it's time for it to go out. I mean, go out while it's still sort of on top.
Because
it's petering out, I feel.
Oh, definitely.
And then it's just like, okay, so how long is this all-out war going to last?
I think it's going to last all season.
Ugh.
I really do think it is.
Who cares?
Because I think it's going to be all season. And then we're going to have that time jump, because apparently in the books there's a time jump after the war. So I think that's what it's going to, you know, at least that's what I think, if they're going to follow the comics.
And it's really disappointing because that was episode 100. So that's like a big episode.
And it was kind of an episode.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, there were some good things that, Daryl riding around blowing up shit was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Hilltop pretty much saying, screw you, Gregory, we're with Maggie, that was pretty good. Except for when Gabriel...
Yeah, dumb Gabriel.
Dumb Gabriel.
And the thing is, again, like, I don't care about him.
Right, I don't either.
So if he gets caught, he gets caught. That's I don't care.
Like, I don't
kill
care
him.
About Gabriel.
Yeah.
I mean, I was finally starting to think, okay, maybe you're not as dumb as you were in the beginning, but then you do this, and you're like... But yeah, I still don't care about Gabriel at all.
No.
So.
He's not the character that I think they needed to put in that situation for you to really care about what happens with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of redeemed himself. Kind of. A little bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah. Yeah, Walking Dead.
It's like. It's on tonight, and I don't think I'm going to watch it tonight. I'll watch it sometime this week. You know what I mean? Like, there's other things I want to watch that are much better.
Like The Good Place.
The Good Place. Oh, my God. Did you watch this week's episode?
Yes.
It was
the
so
Janet
funny.
Episode.
It was so good.
It is really changing the way I think a lot of people see a one-camera comedy.
Definitely. I think so.
And I know that some of the producers are from Lost, so I understand that, you know, they're in the comedy realm and they're doing great things. It just scares me after every episode's so good. I'm like, how can they keep changing? It's almost like they are rebooting the show.
I know.
Every single episode.
There was some really good joke in that last episode, and I can't remember. Oh, it was something about, like, what's the food people think they like, but it's also kind of a bummer, and he's like frozen yogurt. It's really funny.
It's so true.
It's so true, though. So I don't know. It is
such a smart, funny show.
Exactly. It's great.
And it doesn't follow the same formula as other shows that you expect it to try and be like. It is literally its own show, and it does things way differently than you expect from any show like that. And I love that it's 30 minutes.
I know. It's so good. Yeah. So if you're not watching The Good Place.
And everyone on that show.
Everyone. Great.
Janet is my favorite.
Janet is, especially after this last one, but she made me laugh so much. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're all great.
And so creative.
So creative. Agreed. If you're not watching The Good Place, you really should, because it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully it's doing well in the ratings. I know, obviously, Will and Grace is doing well in the ratings.
Yeah, I think it is doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as a network TV show can do these days. It's not on The Big Bang Theory or CBS.
Right.
Right.
That's true. Okay, so let's get to our interview real quick with the CEO of Emily Best of Seed and Spark.
Seed and Spark.
So Seed and Spark, this is a very interesting concept.
It's a great concept.
It's basically a crowdfunding for like filmmakers. It's definitely a new model of entertainment that combines, and I'm reading this from their website, combines convenience and the awesomeness of subscription streaming for audiences that also helps build the careers of these up-and-coming filmmakers. So basically, there's a subscription for this, and I'll have Emily go into a little bit more detail on this. But it's kind of like your Netflix, but it's not as much. It's like $6, $7 a month, and you get to watch these completely original shorts and documentaries, and it's all about diversity, and there are shows about Muslim life, gay, transgender, Black America. There are so many cool
shows. And is this
shows.
Based in Kansas City?
No, it is not.
Okay.
There's a Kansas City connection because there's a local filmmaker
whose movie is featured
in this.
Oh, okay.
So it's all original new programming.
That's really cool.
And
how great.
And the quality is fantastic.
I think that's great for local filmmakers who want to get their product out there.
And they don't want to go to LA. And,
right,
I mean, I know
this,
a lot of it is based in LA, but there
are
so
many
different.
That's great. You want people to see it, and if they see it, they can support it, and they like it. You know, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Okay, so here is my interview with CEO Emily Best of Seed and Spark. How did you come up with the idea of Seed and Spark?
The best way that I can say it is I got tricked into producing a feature film by my best friend. We were raging about the state of women's representation on screen. And I was producing theater, so I, of course, thought the solution would be, you know, producing a play, which, frankly, nobody would have come to see. My friend Caitlin was making a movie with Ed Burns at the time, and it was just the right moment. Like, Kickstarter and Indiegogo had just introduced crowdfunding to creators. The Canon 5D had just put a full-frame sensor in a small camera, making digital cinema more affordable than ever. And that was the year that I got brought into the film business. Was one where there was like and Netflix went all digital. So it was like unprecedented opportunity, totally changing landscape. And I was like, this is the year I'm going to make a feature film. And I was naive enough to just go in headlong. And it was really the challenges and opportunities of making this film called Like the Water that led me to starting Seed and Spark. So the first thing was, it was really hard to finance a movie with a bunch of first-time filmmakers, even though we had Caitlin, whose star was really rising at the time. We wanted to do crowdfunding, but we felt like we were on such a mission with our movie that it was so much more than, like, give us money to make this movie. It was like, we want you to join this journey, and we want you to know what it will take to make this movie. So we built basically a wedding registry. You know, a list of all the items that we would need to make the movie and their associated costs. So everything from like craft services and camera and car rentals to bug spray and sunscreen and coffee, right? And makeup and wardrobe and whatever. And we sent it out to everyone we knew. At that time, this was like long enough ago that it was still the Facebook note function if you wanted to post a really long post. If you dig around on Facebook, you can actually still find it. And we sent it out to everyone we knew. We needed to raise $20,000 to close a budget gap. We raised $23,000 in cash, but much more interestingly, hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans and gifts of locations and goods and services. And then when we finished the film and we started taking it on the festival circuit, people who contributed to that campaign would show up and bring their friends no matter where we were in the world, including Poland and Oaxaca, Mexico. It was super cool. And then I was on the festival circuit with the movie, and women were standing up and saying things like, thank you, I've been waiting my whole life to see this kind of portrayal of women on screen. But sales agents, the like business industry, was saying things like, well, if you could put some lesbian erotica in it, we could sell it. And I was like, wow, this is broken. I wonder if there are better ways for the more clearly expressed desires of the audience to help filmmakers on the distribution side. And so I got thinking a lot about data and entrepreneurship for filmmakers and what the limitations were in the current landscape. And it started with somebody saying to me, like, would you ever make this wish list model of funding available to other filmmakers? I was like, yeah, sure, that sounds cool. So I sort of started working on something that at the time was going to be called the Independent Media Wish List, which is not even a good acronym, as a part of wanting to build a production company. But as I started talking to investors, they were a lot more interested in this wish list than they were the movies, because I was talking about creating a landscape where it would be easier to get diverse and inclusive movies made, right? Mm-hmm. And that was really the birthplace of Seed and Spark. I took a wireframe of the Independent Media Wish List to Sundance in 2012, and I just showed it to anybody who would talk to me. Most especially, I wanted to know what filmmakers felt like they were really missing. And that's what led me to understand a lot more of the broken elements of distribution, where the like institutional bias was latent. And so by December, that was January of 2012, and by December we had launched, you know, a working beta prototype with 14 projects. And the rest is really history.
Wow. That is incredible. And I will tell you, the website is slick. I'm very impressed. Okay, so
thank you. It was not slick in 2012.
Well, you don't want to start. So, I mean, yeah, you guys built up to it, and obviously it's incredible right now. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about those people who, you know, have thought about making a movie and how Seed and Spark can help them.
Sure. We really view ourselves as a career-building tool for filmmakers. So in 2017, whether you like it or not, you're involved in the digital sale of your film. It doesn't mean that it won't have a theatrical release, but ultimately, like, the vast majority of people will consume your movie or show on a television, set-top box, or a laptop. Sometimes mobile, sometimes tablet, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a really different landscape when distribution is so fragmented as opposed to centralized. So it used to be that, like, as a filmmaker, you were not going to have anything to do with distribution. Like, you got cut out at that point. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to be ready to be involved from soup to nuts. And the thing for us is, the universe in which you're expected to go out and independently finance and produce your movie, but then you have to wait to be picked to get distribution and deliver that movie to your audiences, that is not independent filmmaking. That's dependent. And so what we really built is a suite of tools, education, audience building, fundraising, production goods and resources, for filmmakers to really build an independent, sustainable career.
Hmm. Wow. That is incredible. And people who just log on that maybe they're not emerging filmmakers, they can watch some of these different works and they can kind of help build the popularity. Is that kind of how it works?
So there's two sides if you're an audience member, right? One is you can subscribe to our streaming platform, which is on Apple TV and Roku and obviously web. And you can just watch movies and shows that we've curated that are fantastic, and you can't find them really anywhere else. And they're really curated to help you see the world through different lenses. Or you can just go and browse through a bunch of crowdfunding projects, and you can follow them if you want to just, like, keep up with the movie's progress and find out when it's finished and where you can see it. Or you can choose to fund them, and the filmmakers are offering all sorts of really cool rewards. My favorite one recently, set of filmmakers who are, like, they made their first movie collecting, recycling, and painting houses. And so they chose to use crowdfunding to kind of double down on this. And so there was a level at which you contribute where they would come paint your house. Isn't that cool?
That's fantastic.
That's so cool.
Wow. So just different things like that. That's incredible.
So those are the ways that audiences can get involved. It's really fun. There's like a lot of... It's a lot of fun because the filmmakers are creative in so many ways. Their creativity is expressed beyond just the movie that they're making, but also how they're engaging their audiences and the kind of experiences you can have following them. It's really fun.
So what part of the process does a filmmaker, emerging filmmaker, have to be in to get accepted to be a part and be featured on Seed and Spark?
We are not, like, going to read your screenplay, right? Like, mm-hmm. We want the audience ultimately to decide what they want to watch. What we do is we read through everything and we give feedback to make sure that you are really ready to crowdfund successfully. You submit, and our team of crowdfunding experts goes through. We really prefer to get a rough cut of the pitch video so that filmmakers, like, you know, we can make adjustments when we're giving them feedback. And we give them feedback. And if they take it, they can launch. And if they, you know, if they don't take it, sometimes they'll want to launch elsewhere. And unfortunately, what we've seen is filmmakers who take our feedback have an 80 to 85% campaign success rate. Filmmakers who do not take our feedback have a 90% failure rate. So we feel pretty good that, like, we know what makes a good crowdfunding campaign. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we ask is that all filmmakers make a public-facing statement about how their project is going to work to increase inclusion in entertainment. So that could be in front of the camera, telling a story from a different perspective. And we define inclusion really broadly, right? Like, everybody gets sort of stuck on race, gender, sexual orientation, but there's also class and geography and ability and age. So, you know, how is your project increasing inclusion? And it could also be behind the camera, because that really is a place where we need to focus together on inclusion. And the reason that we talk about inclusion is that there are a lot of people who have been systematically excluded from the film business. I mean, a lot of people, like people outside of Los Angeles and New York, have been systematically excluded, right? And so we really want people to focus on how they can be a part of the solution from wherever they are, because that's how we will change the dynamic as quickly as possible.
Wow. So these are, you know, these are films and stories that we just don't see in the mainstream right now, unfortunately, or not enough of them.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that's one of the kind of coolest things about it is when you're pitching for crowdfunding, right, you're asking the audience to get involved well in advance of the film being made. So you have to be able to really clearly articulate why the world would be a worse place without this movie or show, right? Otherwise, audiences are like, it's not like people are hurting for content. You know what I mean? They may be hurting for representation. They may be hurting for diverse perspectives. They may be hurting for a particular, you know, outlook or social cause. But we're certainly, like, there's plenty of things to watch, basically, until the end of time. So if you're going to crowdfund something, you really have to be able to tell people why it's important this gets made. And what we've seen is, like, way more exciting stories are being told, different stories, things that I've seen on screen. There's a project that crowdfunded on Team Spark that is now streaming on our distribution platform, called 37 Problems. And there are just some scenes in it that, like, I was like, you're not allowed to write that. That's crazy. And it was, I just had tears streaming down my face with laughter. Just like stuff that you could never find elsewhere because, like, they'd never let you get that on a network show.
Wow. Okay, so I have to ask you, what kind of feedback have you gotten from these filmmakers about the chances that you guys have given them to really hone their craft and tell a story that needs telling?
Oh man, you know, I was in Austin, Texas for the film festival, and I got a chance to connect with a filmmaker named Jenny Waldo, who was at the film festival with a short that she had crowdfunded on Seed and Spark. And that short's doing really well on the festival circuit. And we launched this year a partnership with the Duplass brothers where filmmakers were able to crowdfund their feature films for a chance to pitch the Duplass brothers to join them as executive producers. And by the way, the Duplass brothers are going to announce who they picked tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on Facebook Live if you want to join us.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Jenny has an unbelievable story. Jenny is a Houston resident because she was a Hurricane Katrina refugee. And then the week that her crowdfunding campaign was supposed to launch, Hurricane Harvey hit. And now all of a sudden she was in Austin, Texas with her kids and her husband on an air mattress in her brother's apartment in Austin as a Harvey refugee. Ugh. And what she said to me this week, this makes me feel kind of emotional. She was like, this was such an incredible opportunity for me, the chance to get this feature film version of Acid Test in front of the Duplass brothers. And I remember how much momentum I lost because of Katrina, and I didn't want the same thing to happen in Harvey. And we obviously, like, reached out to her and were like, what can we do to help you? Like, we totally understand if you want to delay your launch. And she was like, no, you know what? I'm going to do it. Like, this is for me. And she said that the resources that we provided were, like, really helpful for her to feel like she could make that choice even amidst all the chaos. And I just, like, that to me is such a testament to the power of, like, the spirit of the artist.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, she's a mom. She's a two-time hurricane refugee. But she was like, today I'm a fucking filmmaker. You know? And it just, like, I don't know. That made me feel like, if I do nothing else, we've succeeded. You know?
Well, again, probably when you started, you probably didn't think that it would be to this level, did you?
I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, my naivete might be my superpower, to be perfectly honest. Because, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would have been like, Mom, I'm just going to go get a job.
Right.
And it has been, you know, when I started pitching the business, I had a slate of feature films that I wanted to produce that was three movies. And I was, like, really excited to make these three movies. But as a result of working on Seed and Spark instead, almost 800 movies and shows have been made in the last 5 years.
800? So, holy cow.
Yeah. I know. That's how I feel. So, you know, and they all feel like my, you know, my children in some way. You know, like, I loved everything that's come through, really just because of the creative, like, spirit that the filmmakers bring to every project. It's just really, it's exciting, it's inspiring. Yeah.
Well, and no, isn't...
I had no idea this is where we were going to land.
Isn't passion really the key?
Yeah. I mean, it's what people are funding.
Yeah.
Nobody's usually funding another movie or show. They're funding the passion of the artist. And that's really the concept of patronage, right? And that's really what this is. This is people supporting somebody's, like, it's your creative view of the world that someone's supporting. You know, it's your unique lens. It's not necessarily the movie or show itself. It's like, I want to see the world through your eyes, through your perspective. And you know, it takes a tremendous amount of passion to make a thing.
Well, Emily, I believe you guys are really changing the landscape in how how media, film, and all that. I mean, some of these turn into TV shows too, right?
Yeah, there's one that's being developed for premium television right now called Money and Violence, although I have no idea what it will be called in its like, you know, right, premium cable iteration. There's a show that got picked up by Full Screen called Table Talk that I really love. There's a show that is, I don't know who she's going to sign with, called The Fob and I, but she has, like, three other incredible TV show ideas. So, you know, with filmmakers, it's like, you might get on the radar from one show that you've made, but the one that they end up buying is another one that you have on your roster.
There's so many different ways to tell stories, and there's so many more opportunities. Yeah. So... And I'm sure I'm not, you know, a lot of people are like that.
Yeah, the coolest thing about streaming platforms is you're no longer wed to a format. Like, you don't need to have the 22-minute broadcast or the 46-minute broadcast. You know, we're not wed to, like, half-hour, hour-long. Things can be the size of the story can fit the story's appropriate scope. And that, I think, is really cool. You know, we see a ton of engagement on our shorts. Because I think when you're like, I can watch any of these, it's really fun to just blow through them, you know?
Right. That's the ultimate binge watching right there. If you have these little nuggets that you can watch, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. We have yet to see all the ways in which we can break open storytelling, I think.
That's a great way to look at it. I love that. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Emily, thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
All right. That's, so you can fund the show or movie.
That's really cool. Right? What a great idea.
What a fantastic
idea. Right.
It's available right now on Apple TV and Roku.
Oh, okay.
So you can watch it on either one of those platforms. I mean, we have Apple TV.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
But yeah, your subscription goes to help fund these shows.
I mean, yeah, especially if you're into indie films and local filmmakers or whatever. That's such a great idea. And such an easy way to support artists that, you know, might not always get a chance to showcase their stuff to people, you know?
Maybe we should, I wonder if Trevor Hawkins knows about this.
Trevor Hawkins, I don't know. I wonder. That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll have to send that to him.
Yeah.
So, speaking of indie filmmaking, we had the honor.
The honor, yes. We were lucky enough.
Being invited to the premiere of Lattawanna. I don't know if you guys are listeners to our podcast. You did hear our interview with Nathan Kincaid, who is a producer
for the film Lattawanna.
And Trevor Hawkins is the director / screenwriter. A little bit of everything.
Everything, right.
And so they premiered it just recently, we were there.
In Kansas City.
And beautiful film.
Beautiful film. So it was shot almost entirely in the Kansas City area. So Lake Lattawanna is east of Kansas City area, and they also filmed at Lake Jacoma, which is also east of the Kansas City area. It's the metro area. So it's real local filmmaker. Trevor was born and raised at Lattawanna, so he really wanted to make a movie there, and it's beautiful. I mean, beautiful movie. Beautifully shot. You know, and it was really good, I thought. You know, I mean, I thought the acting was stellar. You know, again, the shots were beautiful. And all over, I just really liked it. I did.
Yeah, I think Trevor has quite a career ahead of him.
For his first feature film.
Yeah.
I think he did a really beautiful, wonderful job. So, and all, you know. And it was really fun just getting to hear from the crew and everybody, just the process behind it. They shot it over a year period, which is unusual.
But it took them 3 or 4 years to actually get it
all together. It took them
70 hours
of footage. Right? That's a lot.
I have a hard time logging a 10-minute interview.
Right. I can't imagine.
Let alone 70.
Sifting through 70 hours of footage to edit together. Man.
Yeah,
it was just a lot of fun to hear the cast and crew talk about the process behind it. And the actors also both are relatively new to acting, and I thought they both did a terrific job. So
I thought he was a little bit stronger than she was.
I would agree, yeah.
And I think we could ask Trevor or Nathan about this, but I think they did it almost chronologically in some parts.
Yes.
Because especially the very beginning. I thought she was pretty weak.
Right, I agreed. I think she got better.
Yeah, she definitely got better. And they were the two of them. What helped it work was that they worked really well off each other.
Yeah.
I will say the thing that I know kind of frustrates me sometimes about independent movies is sometimes they want you to fill in the blanks and my mindset almost doesn't work because if I have too many questions, all I'm wondering is what happened there? Because there are a few holes that never really, you don't really get the backstory or what happened. I like to know, even if it's in a line of, hey, you didn't have to do, you know, whatever. But again, that's just personal preference.
Right.
It's still, I definitely enjoyed it.
It's still a great movie, still enjoyable. But yeah, I agree. I mean, and I feel like sometimes there might have been too much plot.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's two there's one really big plot point that leads to another one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I see what they were going with, and I think maybe that could have been simplified a little bit.
A little bit.
Although there's this great scene where they're in this house, they're not supposed to be there.
And oh,
they're
like, my gosh.
That scene was great.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really great job with that. That one had me on the edge of my seat. So that one was really good. So again, I loved the movie. I thought it was great. I mean, for his first feature film, really great.
And I mean, there are a lot of moments where there is no dialogue.
Right.
It's just them just... Being I think there's together
some really good genuine moments in
it. And the film is about the basically the roller coaster ride
of relationships.
So and I can see that.
Yeah.
But again, beautiful.
Right. Beautiful.
But yeah, those scenes in the house. Oh.
Right.
My gosh.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite scene.
And I kind of feel like after that I'm like, I want every movie to have a Q&A afterwards, because I want to know a little bit more about the film. I mean, we don't need that for the superhero movies. We get that.
Yeah, we get that,
But just the independent films and, you know, things like Seed and Spark and things like that. There are so many platforms that are now available to wait for if you have a story to tell and you can partner up with the right person to bring that to reality.
It makes me want to make a movie. I don't know what
I know.
We'd make a movie about, but...
I think I was talking with Michelle, and she was saying there's a screenwriting class at UMKC.
Really?
And there's this guy that I guess he's amazing, and that's how she got into screenwriting.
Oh.
And now her and Patrick have that show on CBS in the mornings.
I know.
On Saturday mornings, the Inspectors or something like that. But she's like, that's all it took was for her to take that screenwriting class. She understood the basics, she figured it out. I mean, she's, you know, done movies and things like that. So, I always wanted to do film in some form.
And
now I'm figuring out the ins and outs and in front of this camera, behind the camera, all that. And I think that's what works. And we've talked about this. I'm taking an acting class right now, and they were saying that, you know, they see a lot more people when they get to my age. You know, you get to the point where, like, you know, I had one career.
Right.
But I've always wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And it's the same with TV. They're like, it is, because I was on camera, but I knew a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And they're like, it makes you a better filmmaker or a better journalist or whatever.
Right.
If you have an understanding of what works and how
Absolutely.
It works. So if then you have a better understanding of the producer and what they're going through.
That
and the writer and the shooter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
I feel like that helps in every industry, especially.
But some people don't see it that way. They're like, nope, I am an actress.
My job. I don't need to know anything else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it helps to know how the whole process works, because then you understand the, you know, struggles sometimes you have to go through. Anyway.
And what it takes and how you can help out. And
it's
definitely a collaborative process. So we'll see where it goes. But anyway, my goal is to have an IMDb page in the next year. And apparently after that, we're going out to figure out how to be a PA, then get to be a background. And like, so that is a goal of this class. By the end of the 6 weeks, we have to reach out to certain places and get started. So we'll see.
Next thing you know, you move to LA.
No, I'm not. No, nope. But that's why a lot of people don't go into film or whatever.
Right.
They don't want to move to the coast. They
want
to. And now there's so many more options like this, where maybe you can go out there for hit this and that. But like, you can be based out of. I mean, just joining the Film Society and meeting the screenwriters.
Yeah.
And people are like, hey, I lived in LA for 15 years.
Yeah.
I can now live here back home in Kansas City and still work in that industry, but not actually be out there because there's so many more opportunities now. So, which that's good.
Yeah. So Lotawana, again, a beautiful film. They're going to be putting it into some film festivals. It's not available to view anywhere just yet. Eventually that is their goal, but it's going to be into some festivals and stuff. So once we know more about eventually when they put it up for streaming or something, we'll let y'all know where you can find it. But if you come across a film festival and you see that this film is part of it, go see it. So, and again, thank you to Trevor and Nathan and everybody else for letting us be a part of your premiere night. It was a lot of fun, and we loved the movie, and thanks again.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Okay, so on our next podcast, we will review the new Thor movie.
The new Thor movie.
We're going to screen it in just hours from now.
Hours. You're right. Mm-hmm. In about 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so look for that. And again, we'll try and post some stuff on our Facebook. We might do like a little mini review, review that
definitely.
We can post.
We can do that.
Mm-hmm. So and from everything that I've read and heard, it should be a good one.
I've heard it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Let's hope Justice League is okay. But anyway,
still on the fence about that. But that's coming. That's coming later this month. So we'll let you know our thoughts.
Yep. On that also, I'll be reviewing the movie Wonder, the new one with Julia Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
Where she has a little boy who is disfigured, and I can barely make it through the trailer without feeling like I want to cry. So we'll see. I mean, they've held on to this movie because it was supposed to be released in April last year, and they've held on to it. And from what I've read, the reason why they held on to it is because they want it to be Oscar
bait. Well, of course, yeah.
Oscar bait.
Yeah, so. That one seems like an Oscar movie.
Mm-hmm. Especially that little boy.
Yeah.
So, and that Jacob Tremblay.
Yes.
From Room.
He's great. He's a great little boy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He's a big Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
That's not segueing into Star Wars, because that could be a whole different podcast. Anyway.
Right. We're trying to wrap. We're making this one quick. So, if we talk about Star Wars, it will not be.
It will not be. We are so close.
So close. We're just almost a month away. Almost.
Okay. Anyway, well, thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yes, please follow, listen to us on Apple Podcasts, App, Stitcher, Google, wherever you get your podcasts.
And also on our new website, agallandagaypodcast.com.
And you can reach us on A Gal and a Gay Podcast. We have a little section where you can reach out to us and email us. You can also follow us, A Gal and a Gay, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So there you go. Yeah.
So many ways.
So many ways to reach us. So that's it. Until next time, guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye.